Podcast Ain't Played Nobody. Alex Kirshner, you were supposed to be in the mountains right about now, but obviously we can't do that, so we're doing the next best thing.
We are. I was planning to be down actually in Boone, North Carolina on vacation this week. We were going to do an interview down there with Appalachian State's new head coach, Sean Clark, talk to him a little bit about how to build and sustain a really strong program at the Group of Five level. And before that, at the FCS level, I think App State really should just be referred to as a really strong football program in general. And we want to talk about that. So he was gracious enough to join us over Zoom. Sean Clark's been around quite a bit. He's an App State guy, played there in the 1990s on the offensive line under Jerry Moore, bounced around at a bunch of places as an assistant, rejoined App State in 2016 on Scott Satterfield's staff, stayed there with Eli Drinkwitz in 2019, and is now in the big chair. So we're going to talk to him a lot about how App has built and sustained and what their plans are going forward, and hopefully find some instructive lessons about program building in general.
He is, I mean, extremely Appalachian State, as you noted. App State is interesting to me, and I'm glad we kind of got away to do this interview, because I think a lot gets made of Georgia Southern's success at the FCS level and then their success after jumping to FBS. But Appalachian State has done it as well, at least at the FCS level, more recently with where national championships are concerned, and then jumped. If you had to kind of balance the two, would you say App State's done it better or Southern?
I think App State's done it the best in the FBS realm in terms of making that jump from the lower half of D1 to the upper half. I don't know how much more you can ace it than winning the Sun Belt almost every year since you go up, claiming a bunch of Power 5 victims along the way, and just, you know, winning double-digit games pretty much every year at this point. It's quite a feat, and I don't think it really has a modern analog when you look at what they've been able to do since that move.
Yeah. All right. So this interview is really interesting. It's really fun when we get to talk to him about offensive line play. Y'all know me, and y'all know how passionate I am about that. So yeah, here's our interview with App State's head coach, Sean Clark.
Coach, thanks for joining us. You are in a really unique position as the third coach in 3 years of a program that has had no scandal, has won a ton of games, hasn't really done anything other but win. Most new coaches talk a lot about establishing a new culture. They want to change attitudes inside the building. It seems like at App State, you already have a pretty good culture in place, at least judging by the results from the outside. How do you view your job then as a new coach compared to what, you know, some peers of yours might have in front of them when they go into a building and really try to overhaul things?
Without a question. Again, I'm fortunate enough to be able to, I played here back in the 90s, and I played for legendary Coach Moore, who was here for 20 plus years, and he established a culture over time. And when Scott took over, he did the same thing. Took the same culture. Then Eli came in and he had his little flair, but down deep, it was still the App State culture. And I think that's one thing we have on the mountain right now is we have tradition and we have culture, and our kids know how to win. So right now for me, I'm just trying to have sustained success. And how do you do that is by recruiting the right kind of guys. And every person that we recruit doesn't fit to App State. So we do a great job of our evaluations. We do a great job of getting our families up here in Boone to get around their families, because we tell them it's not a 4-year decision, it's a 40-year decision. Yeah. And we get the right kind of guys. And I think that's one of the reasons we've had so much success, is because we get really Appalachian guys.
Yeah, I do want to talk about definitely what an App State guy is shortly. I'm curious, though, like, culture, the word gets tossed around so much, including by coaches who fail miserably and don't do well. What does it – and obviously that hasn't happened with you guys – what does it really entail? Like, what's an example of, like, if I were to look at your program, sit inside your building for a week and see culture in action at App State, what is it?
Well, I think you go back, it's a player-led programs. I think that's the biggest, when I talk about culture, is player-led programs. As a coach, if you don't have to sit there and every single day be working on making sure the guys are going to class, make sure they're skipping workouts, that's where you get issues, in my opinion. So for us, it goes back to culture. You know, this is my fourth university I worked for. And every job I went into, we had to try to change the culture because it was a losing program, but teams that hadn't won before. And so when you come back to App, it was a breath of fresh air. And just because as the O-line coach, I didn't have to worry about my guys missing class or skipping workouts or doing the wrong things outside of football. We don't have many police calls, if you say. I mean, our guys, when you're in Boone, you have to try to get to Boone, North Carolina. You just don't pull off the highway and show up in Boone. So it's one of those situations that it goes back to a player-led program. And I can speak examples of the last 20 years of guys that seniors that take charge of the program and lead the way for us coaches.
When you talk about being player-led coach, right now, obviously, we're recording this March 31st. We are kind of in the thick of COVID and quarantine and all that kind of stuff. How is that player-led culture kind of serving you now that they're far-flung and you can't get them every day one-on-one?
Well, I think it goes back to accountability. I know that we have a group. It's a leadership group here on our team, and I speak to those guys on a daily basis. And those guys are reaching out to their teammates to make sure those guys are doing the right thing. Who knows where this is going to take us? I mean, it could be a situation where we come back in July and have 3 or 4 weeks before our first game, or it could be we come back in October. We don't know what's happening. So right now our leadership group is holding our other guys accountable, and we're seeing that through the internet. Those guys are working out, showing pictures, videos, and sharing those to us, and it's neat to see.
So you in your conversations kind of daily with that leadership council, are you getting reports from them? Are you getting like, hey, we're kind of keeping track of the freshmen, that kind of stuff?
I wouldn't say keeping reports on them, but in the same sense, they're keeping those guys accountable. And you know, we're stuck in a situation right now. All the gyms are closed.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went from sending those guys a workout for a gym. Now it's a home workout. I mean, you're talking about old school Rocky IV stuff where you're doing push-up setups. We have guys in logs. I mean, we have guys pushing trucks. It's old school. And because we're in a situation, we're in unprecedented times right now. And every day we're learning something different about the virus and how it affects our sport. And we're just doing the best we can to stay on top of things.
I want to ask you about your staff. Something that is interesting to me is that last year, and under Coach Drinkwitz, I think there were 4 or 5 assistants who'd hung around from the previous year, with Scott Satterfield. That included yourself. I know you have, I think, just a couple like holdovers on the staff, but a bunch of former App State guys, both players or coaches, who you've brought back to coach all over the staff, you know, on both sides of the ball. I'm curious, what is the benefit to you of getting like App guys to be part of that staff? People do pay a lot of lip service to, you know, it's important to have ties to the university at pretty much every school. And I'm curious, given what you've told us about the unique culture that you've built at App, what is significant about that institutional memory of having those guys back?
Right. Well, I start off on the defensive side of the ball, and Dell Jones, who's been here 25 years, as an assistant coach and a coordinator. He went to Louisville with Scott, and I knew if I had the opportunity to bring him back as a defensive coordinator that I was going to do all I could to get him back here. He knows the system that I want to run. He knows the culture. He knows the program. That was very important for me to get a guy back that knows that. Mark DeBastiani, who is our safeties coach, he was a coach here when I was a player in 1995, and I followed his career, and I watched when I was a player, I watched how my teammates gravitated toward him, and I just knew what a difference he could make for our program. He's been a defensive coordinator at several HBCU schools, and everywhere he's went, he's been a winner. On the offensive side of the ball, I wouldn't say a holdover, but Justin Watts has been here 5 years. And he's a guy I'm very familiar with, Justin, and how he recruits, and he knows the program. He knows how we're recruiting things. Nick Cardwell is a former player here. Nick went to Louisville as a quality control coach. I had a chance to bring him back as the offensive line coach. He knows how I want it done. He knows the attitude that I want those guys to play with up front. And he is a true Mountaineer. And again, things that I wanted to be instilled in our program, those 3 or 4 guys knows what it takes to win here. And that's the one thing I wanted to do. And again, everyone I hired, I want those guys to be difference makers in our kids' lives. And not just coaches, but again, mentors, and not to show, not just football coach, but what kind of dad they are, what kind of husband they are. Because I think that goes, it's more than just football here. And we want to make sure our players know that we're true men.
I've heard a lot about Boone. We were actually, initially, I think we were hoping to record this in Boone because I was going
to
come down there.
He was pumped to go to Boone.
Yeah,
man,
I was very excited.
He was excited.
I was very excited. My girlfriend's family is from Boone and they have a place on there. So I was very excited to get there. I'm curious, like, do you feel like what I've gathered from it, I'm excited to see it at some point, haven't done it yet, but that it's a unique place, that it's, you know, because of where it's located, it's somewhat insulated, that having coaches who understand the town and understand, like, the very unique DNA of App State provides any kind of advantage, whether that's in recruiting and player development once you actually get guys there?
I do. It goes back to when you're recruiting guys for Boone. I think the one thing we do is we get kids on campus. And if we get a kid on campus, we have a great shot of getting that the kid to commit to Appalachian State University. When they see our facilities, we're in the process right now. We're building a $60 million complex in the end zone, state of the art. It's a four-story building. Our administration's done a great job with it. It'll be the best 30,000 seat venue in all of college football. There'll be bigger things in our state, but nothing better. But again, it goes back to getting not just the kid, but we try to get the parents on campus to show what kind of education we have. You know, we're in the top 20 universities in the South. I mean, we have majors that can compete with anybody in our region. And once they see what we have to offer, we have a good chance of getting those guys.
Last year when you guys played Charlotte, combined to score almost 100 points. But I think the most interesting part of that game, and I don't know how many times this has happened, but there were two offensive line coaches who were offensive coordinators in that game, yourself and Charlotte's former OC, Alex Atkins. I wonder kind of on a 30,000-foot level, why don't we see more offensive line coaches calling plays?
Well, you know, I think offensive line coaches get labeled sometimes or just guys that just know the trenches. But
tell them about it.
I do feel, and I've said this many a times, that the offensive line coach has the feel for the whole team. And I say that because most of the time we get the lowest denominator athlete on our program. and we have to make sure we get those guys working as one group. And many corners I've been around, they have all these great ideas of I can do this, we can do that. Well, if the offensive line can't do it, then how in the hell is the whole team going to do it? So we go back to, hey, what do we do best up front? And then how can we translate that into our whole system as an offense? And I do believe that you'll see more offensive line coaches be coordinators and be head coaches here in the near future.
So when you describe that, are you talking about from like a holistic kind of offensive sense, you feel that you kind of think protection first and then everything else, and then but maybe other teams are more thinking route concepts and route tree and all that kind of stuff, and we'll figure out the protection later?
Exactly. Most coordinators, they want to throw it 1,000 times a game. And, you know, if we can't block them, then it doesn't matter what they do out front on the sides. I mean, so what do we do best, and how can we translate that into our system? And if you look at our team over the last 5 years, we have been a run-heavy first offense and be able to launch the ball down the field when we need to. And I truly believe if you can run the football at will, then your passing game opens up exponentially. And most of our big plays this past year have been down the field shots because they have to bring a single high safety or no safeties in the box or all the safeties in the box to stop the run, then your pass game opens up.
There is I love that you kind of bring that up because there's a famous story about Steve Spurrier. When Spurrier draws up plays, he doesn't draw up protections. He just draws up routes and tells somebody else to figure it out. you talked about before you kind of took over in that bowl game at the end of 2018, calling plays, you talked about needing to go from the field to the booth. What are the differences there for you about watching a game and calling a game on the field versus in the booth?
Well, I know when you're on the field, you're really into the game. As a position coach, you're watching your position and try to give them tips to how to block things better, how to get things done. When you go to the box, it's almost kind of like being in outer space sometimes because it's quiet up there. And it's really when it was in the Superdome, so it looked like you're on Mars.
Oh, I've been in that press box. That thing's on the roof.
It's on the roof. And to be honest with you, it kind of gave you away, and you could really think in between series. You could get some suggestions from other assistant coaches on the field. And for me personally, it was the best thing to do because, you know, I'm very emotional during the game as a position when I was a position coach. And if I didn't get away from that, I would have been the cheerleader on the sidelines. So I want to get away and make sure I can see the whole picture. And when you're on the field, you're limited to what you can see, but when you're in the box, you get a whole vision of the whole field.
Yeah. When Coach Clark is kind of talking about here, and I'm talking to our audience here, you know, the offensive lineman will kind of come off the field and, you know, maybe Coach Clark's got a whiteboard right here and he's drawing it up and saying, what are you seeing? How do you block this? That kind of stuff. Like, that's what he talks about, kind of like being like really into the game. I think it's interesting. You kind of needed to chill out and kind of go upstairs. And so, you know, it sounds like you trust Nick, your offensive line coach, to really kind of, you know, channel you on the field during a game when you can't be there.
Right. And the one thing that Nick and we talk the same language. So as a series is going on, he could tell me, listen, we have different calls for things. So if we have a zone pressure from the boundary, call it a pirate. If we have it from the field, we call it a stealer. So as we're talking, it wasn't, hey, there's zone dogging from the boundary of the field. Hey, listen, coach, we're getting a bunch of stealers. So right now I know exactly what's happening, what play we want to go to, or hey, coach, we're getting bear cover one, you know, and I can see it from the field. So what do we go to there? What's our best answer for that defense? So I do think when the offensive line coach talks the same language as the coordinator, that you have a chance to be successful.
I have to ask, I'm from Pittsburgh. I noticed that the calls there are pirate.
You're speaking
and
his language.
You are speaking my language. Do we have any local ties that I need to be aware of between Pittsburgh and App State, or is this a coincidence?
It's just a coincidence right there. Just, you know, over time, these are the names you picked up. And again, yeah. Hey, we steal from each other.
Understandable. Understandable. Yeah.
Came up with, but, you know, I coached the offensive line for 20 years. And yeah. I worked for Danny Hope, and those are the names he established when he worked for Howard Schnellenberger.
Okay.
So that goes way back, those names. And when new coaches come in, they have different calls for different pressures or different fronts. And sometimes I'll change those names, but for the most part, they're going to be things I understand because I've done it so long this way.
People who cover college football and cover recruiting, I think, tend to regard you guys as really good at getting your type of player. And you mentioned this earlier, you want an App State kind of player. Pretty much every coach says that stars don't matter. We want guys who fit our culture. It does seem like you guys are uniquely onto something here, given the gulf between your on-field results and what the recruiting rankings would say. Like, what is an App State player, first in terms of physical attributes, but also just in terms of program fit?
Well, I think if you look at our program as a whole, I think we run very well, and we will always recruit speed over size, and that's the biggest thing that gives us an advantage of speed. I'm talking about from the offensive line all the way back to the secondary, receivers, et cetera. We want guys who can run, who are tough, and who are smart. Those are the three marching orders we go by right there. You look at our offensive line, we're not very big. Our starting center is 6 foot, 265 pounds, but he is one of the best football players I've ever coached. Our right guard is 6'2", 285. Our left guard is 6'2", 285. Our left tackle's really 6'3", 285, 290. And our right tackle, he's our biggest guy as a redshirt freshman. He's probably 6'3", 300. But all five of those guys can run. And when you put the tape on, you see the advantage we have over different programs. You can turn the North Carolina tape on, you turn the South Carolina tape on. Our guys up front are really dominating the game. And that was a difference maker for us to get a chance to win against a Power 5 program.
You know, when you talk about speed on the offensive line, what does that allow you to do? Does that allow you to do more zone stuff because they can get out in space and get guys and you don't have to worry about plotting?
Without question. And our base offense, we call it the wide zone. And it goes back to, you know, for years, but they can only take away so many things. If they take away the outside zone, we come back to the inside zone and vice versa. You know, teams that want to load the box on the inside zone, the edges are wide open. So if we can reach the end and make the read clear for the running back, that gives us such an advantage. And sometimes when we play other teams, you know, we reach them too well, to be honest with you. and that causes issues.
What does that mean when you're reach blocking too well on the outside?
Well, for example, if I'm a right tackle and we're running the outside zone to the right, his landmark is facing his armpit, foot, and his crotch. We try to get that going vertical as fast as we can. Sometimes we're overreaching him sometimes. So, you know, it causes problems sometimes, but I'll take that issue any day of the week because we can make it right through the adjacent lineman. But again, we want speed, athletic, and guys who are tough and smart.
For those linemen, kind of what is speed, I guess? Is it more of, you know, the short area, the 10-yard part of their 40 when you test them, that kind of stuff?
You know, people have different opinions on that. We come to camp. If a guy we're recruiting, if he can't run a 5.1 40, which I think is very fast for an offensive lineman, then we don't recruit him. You look at Bear Hunter. Bear Hunter was a defensive end. He was a quarterback in high school. We recruited him as a defensive end. And he's a 4'8", 4'9 guy, almost 300 pounds. Ryan Neusel was a tight end in high school. Those guys can run. So some call it short area quickness. I just call it fast. It's game speed. And if you can play, you can play. But, again, we want guys that can run.
Do you, as far as an offensive line developer, do you find it a little bit easier maybe to work with maybe smaller offensive linemen because you don't have that acclimation period where they're coming in and maybe they got to shed some baby fat or they don't know how to work with their body or play within their body?
Well, I go back to when I was at Purdue as the offensive line coach in the Big Ten. We were, you know, when you're recruiting us, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, you're not the first of the pecking order.
Right.
And so, you know, where do we get our advantage? And here at Appalachian State also, you know, to me, we're labeled as a group of five. I consider we're an FBS program because of our resume over the past few years. We're not – at Appalachian State, we're not going to get a guy who's 6'4", 285 pounds, who runs like a deer, strong as an ox, smart. Those guys are going to go to the Alabamas, et cetera, of the state. So where do we find our niche? And our niche is to get guys who – and again, I go back, we're a developmental program. So – most of our linemen don't start as a freshman. I've only had one freshman start. There are two freshmen start in 20 years of coaching. You know, one's still playing for the Tennessee Titans, and the other one's Noah Hannon. So we have a plan. We're going to develop our players. We get them in as a freshman, make sure the weight room is correct, the string numbers are good, redshirt those guys, play a little bit their redshirt freshman year, and hopefully their starters by the sophomore.
I think that last year on your roster, you had 48 players from North Carolina, but it struck me that you only had 6 from Greensboro, I think 5 from Charlotte, 1 from Raleigh. I think you had 18 players from Florida, 1 from Miami, maybe a handful more from elsewhere around South Florida, and nobody from the other big population hubs in that state. So to go and find these players, it seems like you are maybe not always going to the places where there are the most, you know, the most recruiting eyeballs, the most scouts, the most recruiting agency types. How do you figure out just geographically where you're going to go to find these guys who fit the app mold?
Well, back in the old days, you could outwork people. And that's before the internet and 247 and Rivals. You could outwork people and, you know, work a little harder and find things. Now, you know, with all the technology we have, it's hard to outwork people, to be honest with you, because if Appalachian State offers a kid, he's going to put it on Twitter and everybody else is going to start following it. So in saying that, you know, we're going to recruit in our region, the Southeast region, always start in North Carolina. I think that's, we have to do a great job in North Carolina, and North Carolina and South Carolina has been very good to us over the past few years. South Carolina, I don't know the numbers right now, but it's been very, very good to us. The players we're getting out of South Carolina, because if you're not going to Clemson or South Carolina, all right, what's your next best choice? It's Appalachian State within that 3 or 4 hour radius there. But again, we'll start in North Carolina, work our way south, and get the best players we can possibly get.
As someone who has been around the state of North Carolina for a while throughout your career, I wonder, how have you seen Charlotte just grow as a metro area and a factory for football players? I know you don't have a ton of Charlotte guys, but you know, you've seen that as Atlanta's obviously grown as a hotbed of talent. How have you seen Charlotte grow?
Well, when I first got back here in 2016, that was my recruiting area for the last 3 or 4 years. And you watched the football in the Charlotte area, it gets better and better every year. The coaches are better and better every year. We're getting some great coaches in the city, the Metroplex area there. So again, that's going to be our hub. And the one thing I did, every coach on staff, so we have 10 full-time guys now, each coach has 10 or 15 schools in that area. And we have to do a great job trying to put a fence around Charlotte. Now, I understand we have North Carolina, NC State, Duke, Wake. They're going to get their guys. But I know Will Healy's doing a great job recruiting the city, and we have to do our part to make sure we're getting those guys to App.
I was going to ask specifically about that. There's three, really interesting programs that seem to have a lot of upside in the so-called Group of Five conferences right there in, within several hours of each other. Not completely close to one another, but with you guys, with East Carolina and with Charlotte. One thing that strikes me about Charlotte is that, I imagine culturally it's a lot different than Boone, because you're in, the city of Charlotte as opposed to on the mountain. How much of the recruiting battles that you might have with those types of schools comes down to like a kid wants to live on the mountain, a kid wants to live in a little bit more of a rural place? Like, are there kids that you have to cross off your board because like he's not going to want to come up the mountain to live for 4 years?
Without question, and hopefully when we have kids on campus, it's a beautiful day in Boone, the sun's shining, blue skies. But sometimes we're not that fortunate. Sometimes it's foggy, rainy, snowy, and sometimes mama don't like going from curves sometimes.
Yeah.
And we've lost some great players just because of the day of the week they came to Boone. And if they were a different day, we'd probably have a better chance of getting them. But you're correct what you're saying. If we ask the kids, hey, listen, do you like the mountains? Do you love football? Is this something you want to do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? If they're not answering yes, then they're probably our kind of guys. If they're looking for the limelight, the city, other things to do outside of football, then Boone's probably not the best place for them. But we always say, if you want to win championships and get a world-class education, App State's the place for you.
The FBS transition that the program went through, I know that you were not there right when it happened. You came back a couple years after. But was there anything about the roster building techniques that the program deployed around that time that you think enabled you guys to not struggle for several years before getting your bearings at FBS?
Well, I don't know really the answer on that. I know when you go from 63 scholarships to 85 scholarships,
yeah,
there's going to be a lapse sometimes. I give credit to Coach Moore, the roster he built when we were FCS program. And then when Scott came in, I give him a lot of credit. We have some connections at Georgia Military College down in South Georgia. And we were able to get those scholarships, quality players to fill those spots. We weren't just taking guys to take guys. We were taking great football players. But if you go back, even when we were FCS, when I was playing here, we played Wake Forest 3 out of the 4 years I was here. We beat those guys. So we can compete against the ACC programs. We took Auburn down to the last play in 98, 99. You go to the Big House, you beat Michigan. So we've always had great players here. And so the transition wasn't as hard as what some people might have thought.
You guys have scheduled, you mentioned some of the Power Fives that you've played, have scheduled, it seems like, pretty ambitiously for a long time. And everyone's familiar with some of those games. And, there are a couple in the last few years that obviously you beat both North Carolina and South Carolina last year. You almost get Penn State a few years ago, et cetera. I know you got Wake and Wisconsin this year. How much of trying to punch up at those schools that have more resources is part of just like the experience that you guys are trying to provide your players as well as your fans? Like, how important is it to you guys to schedule very aggressively just for the identity of the program?
I think it's very important. Again, we always talk about, we want to give our players a world-class experience to go play some of the greatest venues in college football. And we've done that, going to Tennessee, Michigan and Penn State, like you mentioned. I would love, in my opinion, I think we should play an in-state school every year. I would love to have a rivalry with East Carolina. I would love to have a rivalry with Charlotte every year. And I would want to – I like to play North Carolina, NC State, Wake every year. I think it's great for college football. I think the fans want that. If NC State plays Texas Tech, who cares? Is Texas Tech going to travel to Carter-Finley and fill the stadium? No. But with Appalachian State and that faithful we have here, our fans travel very well. So I think it's great for college football. Now, you go back to – we played Charlotte. We set an attendance record at Charlotte when we played there for them. I mean, they brought in, I think, 8 or 10,000 extra seats.
Yeah.
And we sold that out. We go to Coastal Carolina, the largest crowd at Coastal Carolina history for football. So our fans travel well, and I would love to see us have a rivalry game with East Carolina, UNC Charlotte, in any school in the state. I think it's great for college football. I think it's the fans want it, and so do we.
When you bring people in and when you bring kids in, you know, the kids that you're recruiting now are maybe 5, 6, 7 years old in 2007. I'm sure you guys have signs about the Michigan win somewhere or somebody mentions it or something. Do they know off the top of their head that y'all beat Michigan? Like, do you have to kind of explain that now?
They have no idea sometimes. But yeah. You know, as a player here, we just tell old war stories. When I played here, we beat Wake Forest, and then those kids don't care. you know, but what we've done, we're really, selling the North Carolina win, the South Carolina win. There's a small picture of the Michigan game because that'll always be etched in history through all college football. It really changed our university after that win. Really put us on the track to go to FBS and. But again, those kids, they couldn't tell you who played in that game or what happened. All they know is we beat North Carolina, we beat South Carolina, almost beat Penn State and Tennessee.
You got to get Armonte Edwards back to talk to these kids, man.
Tell you what, he is one of the best players that's ever put the black and gold on, without question.
I have to say that if I were an advisor to like a Power 5 athletic director, I would probably tell them, do not play those guys. It's a bad idea. You're getting into some trouble. Just being honest with you, if I were saying like, all right, you know, your ticket sales point is fantastic. It's absolutely true. But I do want to ask, has it gotten, and I don't know how much you've delved into this since you've been in the big chair, but has it gotten harder to get people to agree to games down the road because they're like, well, we don't really feel like losing to App State?
Without question. Ask me if you look at our future schedules, because, you know, we're going to Texas A&M here in a few years. Because we couldn't get anybody to play us. San Diego won to Wisconsin. We would love to be here close to where we could drive and our fans could see it. But you know, we have to fill a schedule. And anytime we can play a Power 5 program with the history of Wisconsin and Texas A&M, we'll take that. But it has been difficult scheduling. Now that I'm the head chair, I'm in the meetings trying to schedule teams or games. And some teams don't want to play us. We've tried several Power 5 programs within 5-6 hours from here, and they won't play us.
A theme that we talk a lot about at our website and just in our little corner of the internet in college football is to just be happy with who you are. You know, if you're Alabama, of course, you want to win national titles. Maybe if you're Army, you just want to beat Navy. If you're a team that just wants to make a bowl, that's great. And if you want to win FCS titles, that's great too. You guys are striking because you've, as a school, seem to have come at this a little bit differently. You know, obviously a dynasty in the 2000s in FCS, a great program at that level for a long time. And then you decided as a school, I know that this might have been during years that you weren't there, but I'm asking because you're an App guy anyway, that you decided you wanted more. You wanted to play in FBS. I'm curious what you sensed it takes to make App people happy, given the expectations that this program seems to have set for itself year in, year out.
Right. Well, I think it starts from our administration. I think Chancellor Everest does a great job. She's a football chancellor. She wants to win. Doug Gillen, our athletic director, he has given me everything we have to be successful with a new building, how we feed our kids, how we train. But in saying that, to keep an App fan happy, that's going to be hard. We went 13-1 last year. And when I got the head job, I had a fan send me a note, said, "Hey, let's win with the Cotton Bowl next year." Yeah. Hey, I do too. Okay. But you know, our fans, they want to win. And I want to be the head coach of a program like that. I don't want to be settling for 500 every year. I want to be able to play for championships and give our guys a world-class experience in education. And, as long as I'm here, that'll be our goal.
How different is it being a football school, probably one of the only like football schools in your state, and everybody else cares about basketball, maybe first or at least as equal as football. But you know, at App, it is about football in North Carolina.
It is a football school, and we have several other sports that we support. But again, it comes down to Black Saturday in Boone, and you know, whenever you're filling your stands, we sell it. It's about every game we sell at home. It's important to be at a football school because it is important to everyone in the town, the state, and the surrounding states. I'm just very, very fortunate to be the leader here at Appalachian.
Do you think that in general, just curious for your impression of this, that the fan base is glad to be playing FBS ball, contending, winning most years your conference, versus continuing to be, you know, one of the top two or three schools in FCS and winning national championships often?
Well, I think our fans just want to win.
Yeah. And so just win, period. Winning is winning.
Winning is winning.
Yeah.
And we talk about all the time. We call it winners win around here.
Yeah.
And that's been our motto for the last 5 years is, hey, what can we do to be the best program in the Sun Belt Conference? That's our goal every year. We want to win the Sun Belt Conference in a bowl game, class, integrity, and academic excellence. So that's our order right there, to be the very best where we are.
Do you feel, I felt this, so I'll just say off the top and then I'll ask you. I felt like last year it was a little odd that you guys did not seem to get a great deal of hype for the Group of Five's New Year's Six Bowl throughout the year. I think the impression was you'd have to go undefeated and a one loss year wouldn't do it, just because the AAC has that reputation. Ultimately you lost one game and that kept you out of that bowl game. Did you feel in any way like the Sun Belt, you know, deserves, for purposes of that specific bowl game debate, more respect? Is it something that you worry about at all?
Not really. That's out of our control. I know if you look at the Sun Belt from top to bottom, it's one of the premier Group of Five conferences out there. You got Lafayette. Lafayette's a great program in the West. Arkansas State, App State, Georgia Southern. Georgia State's an up-and-coming program. Sean Elliott, an App grad, who's doing great things there. But from top to bottom, I'll put our conference against any Group of Five program out there.
Yeah.
And again, I think our resume speaks for itself. I mean, we talk about a lot of firsts. It's the first time in Sun Belt history that we had a football team that was ranked for 2 weeks in a row. It's the first time in Sun Belt history that team has won two Power Five games. So I think our commissioner Keith Gill has done a great job of scheduling and promoting our conference. And I think we'll see those fruits down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, I'll let you go after I ask you this. There have been a bunch of iterations of App State football, some good teams going back to the middle of the last century. You had a national contender, you know, 80s, 90s. You become a championship program in the mid-2000s. You have a big famous upset in that period as well. And then you're an FBS startup that goes on and achieves pretty unusual success very quickly. I ask this because it feels like the program is always punching up. What is the next thing that you would like to see this program achieve, reach as a, you know, as a team, and you know, what does that look like for you?
Well, we always talk about sustained success here at Appalachian State, and with the landscape of college football changing year in and year out, who knows where it's going to take Appalachian State? I know that there's been talk about different conferences and this and that. And again, my message to the administration is we want to be the very best in the Sun Belt, and then we'll go from there. I just know that what we had to offer here in Boone is something very special. I mentioned it earlier, you have a chance to get a world-class education and play for championships. And it's not a four-year decision, it's a 40-year decision. And I just know if people come to Boone, and win championships, get a great degree. We've done our job as coaches.
Coach, I really appreciate your time and for joining us on the show this week. You and your staff and all your players, please stay healthy in this time. And, man, I hope we kick some balls in September and get this season going.
I appreciate it, guys. Make sure you come to Boone and visit.
Will do. Will do.
Run us up here. I'll take you out to eat sometime, okay?
Fantastic. Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate you.
So that is Sean Clark, the head coach at App State. Richard, good talk. I bet that you have things to say about his discussion of offensive line coach opportunities, philosophy.
Oh, of course. Of course. As a former awful offensive lineman, the topic of offensive linemen calling plays and calling the offense is it. I do not understand. Like, first of all, it's a stigma. That's what it is. There's a stigma around offensive line coaches that they don't know what they're doing, that they don't know the broader context of the offense. I mean, first of all, the run game aside, what people don't get about the passing game is that protection schemes change depending on how deep the passing patterns are on top of them. You know, depends on who's in the passing patterns. You can obviously block with 5, 6, 7, or 8 pass blockers, depending on how many receivers a team wants in a pattern on a given play. You know, there is a kind of a debate in the offensive line world about pass protection, about who should call it. Some teams think that their quarterback should call it. Other teams think that the center should call it and the offensive line should deal with it because the offensive line is the people that are blocking. So protection is way more tied into the passing game than just the example that I gave, which is the old Spurrier story that Spurrier would just come up and draw some routes on the board and tell somebody else to figure out the protections. I think your offensive line coach should absolutely be integral in calling plays, in more than just being a run game coordinator, which Sean was before he became kind of the offensive play caller co-OC. So it's something that I'm passionate about when you think about the architecture and how your offense is built, particularly when you have an offensive lineman who, like Coach Clark, is not afraid to take shots.
You know, what's funny to me is if I hear like a Spurrier or a Leach talk about how, actually, I don't give a shit about these fucking protection, you know, like, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, as long as you can talk about that passionately and be like, I don't care about that. I'm going to just beat you with great route concepts and great timing between my quarterback and receiver. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And then you hear, Sean Clark talk about how you really can't run their offense without, having a very well-defined blocking scheme and the right type of players in the offensive line. I'm like, wow. Mike Leach, that would be completely reckless, Spurrier. So it just goes to say that if a coach is a good salesman, he can get me to buy into pretty much any scheme as a workable idea.
I mean, offensive line is the most unique position in team sports. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
Yeah. So App State is, as we talked about during the interview, always punching up, always trying to be A, winning, and B, I think enhancing its status in the sport, and it's done so very successfully. My big question is, if there is football in 2020, who are they beating between Wake Forest and Wisconsin? Both or just Wake?
Ooh.
Because you know it's going to be at least one of them. They're not going 0-2 in those games.
I am very curious about how Wisconsin and Jim Leonard's defense will try to stop what App tries to do. I think that because of how Wisconsin lines up in that kind of 2-4-5 we talked about on the show before, you know, they've got a lot of, you know, linebackers standing up, that kind of stuff. While that gives your protection issues in the run game, we talked about zone in the interview, wide zone or outside zone. They're a little bit different, but for purposes of the exercise, wide zone and outside zone, basically the same. And so for those plays where you're blocking in space more than it's kind of a between the tackle type run game, I'm interested in how App State matches up, how their offensive line scheme overlaps with what Wisconsin's able to do on defense. Now, I don't know if they're going to have on App State's defense, I don't know if they're going to be big enough to stand up to what Wisconsin's going to try to do. But I am interested about how App, because if App could put up some points in that game, we may have something pretty unique.
Yeah, that's one to absolutely mark down in the event that we get to play football this year. But I think that regardless, you'd have to look at App State as, once again, a frontline Sun Belt contender. And I think in that discussion, he did not take the bait when I asked him if he felt that the Sun Belt should get a little bit more credence in New Year's Six bowl debates.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get, I thought I was going to politic.
I was hoping for some politicking there, to be honest, because I felt like last year, I would have liked to have seen App State in that game against Penn State in the Cotton Bowl. And I understand that Memphis had a good case, but we're going to see how it goes. And it was a really good bit of insight to talk to him.
Yeah, we appreciate Coach Clark in App State for helping us set that up and coming on the show. Alex, be well, stay well, and I'll see you next week.
Be well, stay well.